Welcome, patrons. You don't find the Duskglass Motel. It finds you. There's no listing, no website, just a flickering vacancy sign on a road that wasn't there yesterday. Some guests come chasing ghosts, others come to forget, but no one ever leaves remembering the same name they arrived with. Tonight, we check in. And if you hear something breathing behind the mirror, don't look. Welcome to Duskglass Motel, room 109. Chapter 1, The Motel Where Nobody Remembers. The road has been quiet for hours. Lyle Maddox drove in silence, the buzz of his broken radio the only sound beyond the wheeze of the hot wind battering the windshield. The GPS had long since stopped working. All maps refused to display the last 12 miles. Now there was only a dirt road unraveling into dust, bordered by nothing but bone-colored rocks and the occasional twisted fence post that marked no boundary. The Duskglass Motel emerged slowly. Not like something you discover, more like something that remembers you first. 12 rooms, one office, all peeled paint and crooked eaves. There was a swimming pool, bone dry and cracked like an old tooth. Plastic deck chairs scattered like the aftermath of a forgotten party. The sign above it all, neon struggling to cling to life, read, "Vacancy." And the wind made it hum. Lyle killed the engine. The world grew still. From the passenger seat, Dr. Mara Keene unfolded herself. Her shoes crunched into gravel as she stepped out, shielding her eyes. The heat shimmered like fever in the air. She stared at the building with a haunted expression, as if there were something she'd already lost once.
"She dreamed about it,"
Mara said quietly.
"Jessa, my sister, said she saw the place at night before she disappeared. She was terrified. Said the rooms had mouths. Said they whispered things that weren't in any language."
Lyle said nothing. He reached for his recorder, clicked it on, and spoke more to himself than anyone else. Duskglass Motel, supposed site of 9 disappearances over 30 years. No evidence, no bodies. Locals blame memory loss. People check in and vanish from their loved ones' minds. Classic urban myth or something worse. He looked up. The front office door had swung open on its own. Inside, the air was still and heavy. It smelled of mothballs and warm plastic. Behind the front desk sat a man in a dusty bellhop uniform, eyes hidden behind sunglasses, so black they seemed like ink stains.
"Welcome back,"
the man said without smiling. "We've never been here." The clerk tilted his head.
"Haven't you?"
He slid a brittle guestbook across the desk. Inside, names were written and then scribbled out violently, black ink torn into the yellowing paper. Only a few remained legible. One was underlined 3 times. J. Keene. Mara's hand trembled.
"Where did she go?"
The clerk didn't answer. He placed 2 keys on the desk, old brass keys, heavy and cool, attached to cracked plastic tags. Room 109 and room 110. Lyle picked his up. The number was scratched deeply, like something had tried to destroy it with a knife.
"She's still here, if you remember how to find her,"
the man said softly. Lyle looked behind the desk. The wall was plastered with old photos, Polaroids and black and white, snapshots of guests, but their faces were all burned or blurred. In one, someone stood in the motel hallway, eyes glowing faintly like light through skin. On the desk, partly obscured by a coaster, something had been etched into the wood. Lyle brushed it off with his sleeve and read aloud, "Forget to leave, and you'll leave to forget." "Cute," Lyle muttered, his voice brittle, like something a stone poet would carve into a gas station stall. But Mara didn't laugh. She was staring at one of the photos. A little girl in a swimsuit, standing at the lip of the empty pool. Her face was gone, peeled away, as if by fingernails.
"That's her bathing suit. She wore that this summer before. She went missing."
Lyle glanced back toward the office door. It was closed now, but neither of them remembered shutting it. A chill brushed his spine, even in the dry heat. Outside, the neon vacancy sign flickered twice, then went dark. Chapter 2. The First Night. The rooms smelled of cold air that had never been fresh. Lyle turned the key to 110. The door groaned open with a sigh too human. Inside, green carpeting the colour of bile, beige wallpaper patterned with faded vines, and a queen-sized bed beneath a ceiling fan that clicked slowly, like a clock trying to remember how to tick. Mara took 109. It was identical. That sameness felt wrong, like a repeated word losing meaning. The air conditioners in both rooms coughed awake on their own, leaking condensation that dripped steadily, a heartbeat for the forgotten. The sun dropped like a stone. The desert outside swallowed the last of the light. The night came down hard. Lyle sat at the desk, unpacking a battered recorder and camera. He lit a cigarette he wasn't supposed to have and stared at the wall. It was textured, but in the right light, the swirls looked like faces, screaming, maybe, or just mouthing something. He booted up his laptop. No signal. He tried to hotspot from his phone. No bars. He turned on the motel TV. Static. Fine and endless. He flipped through all the channels. Nothing but snow. Then something flickered. A frame. Maybe two. A red shape moving across a kitchen floor. Familiar furniture. The corner of a toy chest. He blinked. On the screen, a burning house. His house. Lyle's house. The one from when he was 7. The fire had started in the crawl space. His brother had... He turned the TV off. Then on again. Static. But his throat was dry. His hands shaking. From the bathroom mirror, something shifted. Not in the glass, but behind it. A twitch of light, like a figure turning away. He stepped closer. His reflection was smiling. He wasn't. In 109, Mara stood in silence. She held her sister's photo in her palm, like it might dissolve if she let go. She had brought it everywhere since Jessa had gone missing. Now, for the first time, the image was fading. Not from where, not from light. It was bleaching itself. Her sister's face blurred at the edges, as though it had never quite existed. She moved to the mirror and stared at herself. Her lips trembled. Her breath fogged the glass. Behind her, briefly, something was standing. Skinless. Wet. Watching. She spun. Nothing. The light above the mirror buzzed, then blinked out. A sound came from the wall. Not behind it. Within it, scraping. Like something dragging itself slowly across sheetrock. Then a whisper. It sounded like her name, only not said with a human mouth. Later that night, they met in the hallway. It was colder there. Lyle lit another cigarette with a hand that wasn't steady anymore.
"The TV showed me something,"
he said. "Something I haven't thought about in 20 years. Not really. Like it pulled it out of a locked drawer in my head." Mara didn't blink. "I saw something in the mirror. I think it saw me first." From the corner of their eyes, one of the doors slowly creaked open. Room 104. Inside, nothing. just a room, lit by the flickering static of a black and white television. But the bed sheets were damp, not with water. Blood, old, congealed. No body. On the floor lay a single photo. Lyle picked it up with trembling fingers. It was him. 10 years ago, sitting at a bar, the date scrawled on the back, a memory he didn't remember being photographed. But someone had taken the picture, and in the mirror behind him, there was another figure. No skin, no eyes, just red muscle, raw and gleaming. And it was smiling. They ran back into the hallway. The door slammed shut behind them. The hall had changed. It was longer now. There were more rooms than before, room numbers reaching into 200s, even though the motel only had one wing, one floor. At the far end, a glowing television sat on a cart. An old security feed, grainy and flickering. One by one, the rooms flickered into view on the monitor. Room 101. Empty bed. Sheets writhing as if something breathed beneath. Room 106. A woman sitting perfectly still, eyes wide. Hands gripping her cheeks. A scream stretched behind her lips. Room 110. Lyle. Pacing, except he was here. Room 109, Mara asleep, but Mara was standing beside him, watching. Then the screen went black. A message faded in, handwritten, flickering over the feed. If you see yourself, something has already been taken. Back in his room, Lyle stared at the TV again, static, until he saw a door open. On the screen, room 110, his room. The bleached man stepped inside, gliding, soundless, his body a wet shimmer of red muscle gleaming under the false light. His face was a smooth canvas of exposed flesh, and he looked at the camera. No eyes, no sockets, but he looked. Then he spoke, not in his voice, but in Lyle's. And he said, "You left the door unlocked." Chapter 3. The Archivist and the Bleached Man. The next morning arrived like a lie. The light outside was grey and bruised, cloudless yet without sun. Lyle opened his eyes to the sound of whispering static, though his TV was off. The clock read 3:13 a.m., then blinked to 7:42, then turned blank. He didn't remember falling asleep. His notebook, the one where he jotted his thoughts obsessively every night, was blank. Not empty. Blank. The pages were white, but had the texture of paper that had once been written on and erased. The ink was gone, even the impressions. He rubbed his temples and for a moment couldn't recall his middle name. Next door, Mara was still awake. Her fingers bled from clutching the edges of the photograph all night. Her sister's image was entirely gone now. Only a background remained, a motel pool cracked and dry, a shape in the water's reflection. She hadn't blinked in nearly an hour. There were two voices in her head. One whispered with her sister's tongue. The other sounded like wet cloth being wrung out over teeth. Both told her to go to room 108. Room 108 wasn't on the map. The motel's printed brochure, a faded sheet she'd found in the bedside drawer, listed 101 through 112. But between 107 and 109 was a narrow door, slightly smaller than the others. It looked unsure of itself, warped, like it didn't want to be seen. Mara knocked. The door opened a crack before she touched it. Inside sat a man in a dark three-piece suit, old-fashioned and pinstriped. He wore a name tag that read, "The Archivist," carved into bone. He looked up and smiled warmly. His eyes were missing. In their place were tiny typewriter keys that clicked when he blinked. "You've brought grief," he said, gesturing for her to enter. "Please sit." Mara sat stiffly. Her muscles screamed. The archivist placed a heavy, leather-bound book on the table between them. It had no title. Its spine was stitched with thread the color of dried blood. "Memories are heavy things," he said gently. "Some too heavy. I offer alternatives." He opened the book. The pages were thin sheets of skin, tanned and bound. Words danced across them, actual letters crawling like insects. They rearranged when she looked too closely.
"I can take it from you. The pain, the loss, the name. You can't say without your throat closing. Wouldn't it be easier to live without it?"
Mara stared. Her hands trembled in her lap.
"And in return?"
she asked. The archivist leaned forward. His smile never changed.
"Nothing of consequence. Just a small moment. A birthday. A face. A truth you no longer need."
Behind him, the walls shimmered. On shelves sat hundreds of items. A child's pacifier. A wedding ring. A bullet, all labelled with dates, all forgotten by someone. Mara rose, heart hammering. She turned and fled. But when she stepped back into the hallway, the doors were different. The numbers now counted down. Elsewhere, Lyle was watching the security monitors again. Each room flicked by, some empty, some not. Room 104, a man clawing at the mirror, weeping blood. Room 108, static. Only static. Room 110, a figure sleeping in his bed except Lyle was standing right here. He leaned closer again. The figure in the bed, though, opened its eyes. Slowly. Very slowly, and stared directly at the camera. Lyle gasped. The screen flickered, and the bleached man stepped into frame. Room 110, his room, shook visibly on the monitor, like something underneath it was breathing. The bleached man moved with fluid stillness, his limbs too long, the skinless sinew of his body gleaming under dim light. Then he turned and walked backwards, directly into the wall. The feed went black. Lyle backed away, hands shaking. Then he noticed the camera had a second screen. One labelled Archive Feed, Backward Storage. He turned it on and saw himself arriving, checking in, speaking to the clerk. But then, another version of himself, earlier, younger, and another, room 110 had been assigned to Lyle dozens of times. He watched himself across the years, always arriving, always forgetting, always vanishing. And behind each one of those versions, somewhere in the corner of the frame, the bleached man stood, waiting, patient, eternal. Outside, Mara staggered into the motel courtyard. The pool was full now, not with water. With a mirror surface, black as oil, something floated in the center. A small red shape. A dress. A child's voice echoed from the empty air.
"You can trade anything here, except the truth."
Mara fell to her knees, hands covering her face. Inside her skull, something scratched to get out. That night, Lyle found a note on his bed. It was written in his own handwriting, but he hadn't written it. It read, "He doesn't take what you give. He takes what you try to keep." Chapter 4. The Room That Watches. The third night fell without warning. There was no sunset, only a sudden dimming. Like the motel's world had slipped a notch lower in some cosmic drawer. The lights buzzed dully. The air was still and wrong, the kind of silence you find in a sealed mausoleum. Not a desert motel. Lyle didn't remember eating that day, or speaking or sleeping. The hours between dusk and now were an open wound. His recorder had been wiped again, and the timestamps were reversed. ticking backward by the second. Room 101 had changed. The carpet was darker, the wallpaper now bore a twisting floral pattern that resembled veins, and when he lay on the bed, the ceiling fan blade stopped spinning every 30 seconds, as if something watched him watching it. He tried the mirror again. It no longer reflected the room, only himself, over and over, endlessly, as if he were surrounded by mirrors. But in the seventh reflection, back, his smile twitched out of time. That Lyle winked and bled from one eye. Mara didn't sleep. She sat on the bed in room 109, tracing the outline of her sister's name in the dust on the window pane. But no matter how many times she wrote it, Jessa, the letters faded within minutes, as if the room was actively resisting memory. She opened the drawer by the bed. No Bible, just a single cassette tape with no label. She put it in the player and pressed play. At first, silence. Then a voice, her own, murmuring things she'd never said.
I saw her in the water. I reached for her hand, but it slipped off like skin. She smiled without lips. She said, he's already using your voice.
The tape clicked, then rewound itself by itself. She tore it out and hurled it across the room. It split open on impact. Inside, there was no tape, only a curled photo, black and white. Room 109, a girl sleeping in bed. Her sister. In the corner of the room stood the bleached man, looking directly at the camera, his head tilted in affection. They met me outside again, near the pool. It was full of water now, or something like it. The surface shimmered like mercury. Reflections didn't align. Lyle knelt, touched the edge. It rippled and showed him not his face, but a memory. His brother screaming. The fire. The bedroom door melting. Then that moment twisted. The child in the image looked up and had no face. Only raw, bleeding meat where features should be. He recoiled. Mara didn't speak. She just pointed to the far end of the pool. Room 103's door had opened. Inside, the light was dim and flickering. The wallpaper had peeled off entirely in long, curling strips. Beneath it were photographs, hundreds of them, glued directly to the wall. All Polaroids. They stepped in. The air felt thick, humid with rot. Each photo showed a person. Most were asleep. Some were weeping, others missing parts of their face. But each were inside a room here. These rooms. In one photo, a woman stood facing the mirror, her back flayed open. Another showed a man curled under the bed, whispering the same word again and again. They flipped a photo over, on the back in a scratchy, childish scrawl. Remembered too hard. Lyle turned slowly. There was a mirror on the far wall. In it, he saw himself standing alone. Mara wasn't beside him. He looked to his left. She was gone. Mara had stepped into room 111. She didn't recall opening the door. The room was not like the others. It was a replica of her childhood bedroom, perfect in every detail, down to the chipped blue desk and the unicorn sticker on the closet door.
I didn't tell anyone about that desk.
She stepped closer. On the bed lay her sister, sleeping, breathing. Mara reached out.
Jessa?
The girl opened her eyes. They were empty sockets. And from within them, the bleached man leaned forward, crawling out like a spider from a shell. She screamed and stumbled back. The door slammed behind her. The windows vanished. The walls became flesh, twitching. The bleached man took a step forward. She didn't run. She whispered.
What do you want?
His mouth opened. Inside was her voice. It said,
you forgot the wrong thing.
Lyle found her hours later, or what felt like hours later. Time no longer behaved. She was standing in the hallway, barefoot, staring into the motel mirror. Her eyes were dry, her face blank.
I just remembered something. It never happened. I wash myself dying, but not here. Somewhere colder.
Did he show you? Lyle asked. She nodded. He didn't need to. I already knew. He just took the part that made me care. That night, they both dreamed the same dream. The motel was underground, infinite, room after room stacked like hives, each pulsing with light. In one, the bleached man sat behind a reception desk, smiling. Guests approached one by one, each offered something, a lock of hair, a scream in a jar, a set of eyes held out like coins, and in return, he gave them silence. Not peace, not rest, just silence. Lyle woke up gasping. There was a figure standing at the foot of his bed. He didn't look. He couldn't. He closed his eyes and the figure leaned down and whispered,
"You won't even know I was here."
Chapter 4, The Sacrifice of Memory. The motel had shifted. Not in structure, but in intent. The walls no longer just watched, they listened. The rooms pulsed with an invisible heartbeat, and the air inside them was no longer still. It was waiting. Mara woke up screaming, only it wasn't her voice. She clutched her throat, breath ragged, and stumbled into the hallway, where Lyle already stood, pale and trembling. They moved the rooms again. He held up a floor plan, the original brochure. It now showed 16 rooms, not 12, and beneath it, in faint ink that hadn't been there before, was a line scrawled in jagged letters. To stay is to forget. To leave is to lose yourself. Mara stared at him, her eyes bloodshot.
I don't think we're supposed to leave. I think we're meant to trade.
Lyle's mouth twitched. Trade what? She turned and pointed towards the pool. The water was gone again, replaced by mirrors. Shards of them, dozens, all arranged like teeth in a great gaping mouth. And each shard reflected not their present self, but moments. Moments they weren't supposed to remember. Lyle leaned over one and saw himself kneeling in a church, holding a bottle, slurring apologies to a headstone that bore his own name. In another, Mara saw a hospital hallway, her sister on the operating table, heart monitor flatlining. The memory came with a sound. The snap of gloves, a scream.
Do something!
And then behind her, her reflection whispered,
"But you didn't."
They returned to the front desk. The clerk was gone. In his place was a black binder. Inside were names. Hundreds of them. Some crossed out, some circled, some, like Lyle's and Mara's, were underlined with red ink. Next to their names were symbols. Lyle's a flame, Mara's a broken chain, and beside both, a column marked, "Sacrifice Offered?" with a question. Beneath it, incomplete. They stared in silence until the bell on the counter rang itself. The archivist stood behind them, though neither had heard him enter. He smiled.
"He's very old, you know. Older than flesh, older than death."
"Who?" Lyle snapped. The archivist ran a thin finger down the binder.
"The one who bleeds you clean. The bleached man."
And now, finally, the truth emerged. The Dust Glass Motel was not a place. Not entirely. It was a filter. A trap for the human mind. Built not with bricks, but with remnants. Grief. Regret. Shame, all the things we bury deep and call healing. The bleached man was its custodian, a living deletion, a soul eater who fed not on flesh, but on identity. He took what you couldn't let go of, what you clung to, the memories that shaped you. Then he fed them to the rooms. And the more you tried to remember, the deeper you sank into him.
"There's a way out. But it's not what you think."
He gestured toward the hallway, where room zero now waited.
"It requires a sacrifice."
Lyle stared. "Sacrifice what?" The archivist smiled sadly.
"The truth that makes you who you are, the one you've built your guilt around. Give him that, and he'll let you go."
Lyle backed away.
If I give that up, then I'm not me anymore.
No.
The archivist said softly.
You're not.
That night, Mara entered room zero. It was blacker than sleep. Inside, she found her sister, young, crying.
Why didn't you come?
The girl asked.
I tried. I was scared.
I waited. I called. You didn't pick up. I died, waiting.
Mara fell to her knees. The bleached man was behind her now. He placed a hand, wet and raw, on her shoulder.
Give me this.
He whispered in her own voice.
Give me this pain and forget.
Mara sobbed.
What happens if I do?
You'll be free.
And her?
The bleached man said nothing. And she nodded. Lyle waited outside. When Mara emerged, her eyes were dry, her shoulders straight, her hands calm. Jessa? He asked. She tilted her head.
Who's that?
In his room, Lyle found a VHS tape on the bed. It had his name written in dried blood. He played it. On screen, himself, at his brother's funeral, laughing. The bleached man stood beside him, smiling, holding a matchbook.
Give it up.
His own voice said through the speakers. But Lyle didn't move. That night, the bleached man came to him. Lyle stood in the center of his room, tears drying on his cheeks. I remember everything, he said. And the bleached man paused. Then, for the first time, he bowed and whispered,
Then you've earned your end.
Chapter 6. Who I Used to Be. Lyle no longer slept. The room didn't allow it. The walls whispered lullabies in backward tongues, and the bed twisted under his weight like muscle around bone. Outside his window, the world no longer resembled a desert, just a smeared painting of light and sound, bleeding at the edges. But inside, something had clarified. He remembered it all now. The fire, the drinking, the fights with his brother, the way his voice had sounded the night before his brother died, full of venom and finality. You ruin everything, he said. And in the morning, his brother was gone. The bleached man hadn't taken that memory, because Lyle wouldn't give it. He had held onto it like a wound, letting it rot inside him until it became a purpose. Now the room buzzed louder, and the archivist was afraid. Mara sat on the edge of the dry pool. She no longer remembered what she'd lost. Her sister's name was a hollow vowel, empty of meaning. But something inside her ached, a pressure in the back of her skull, a presence. That night she dreamed of a field. Tall grass, a little girl running ahead, laughing. The sound of a laugh was like a melody she had once known, in childhood only. When she woke, she whispered the name, Jessa, and the room shook. Lyle walked to the lobby. The walls bled static. The photos had rearranged themselves, and now every face wore his own. He found the clerk slumped over the desk, lifeless. Or maybe not dead, just drained. His sunglasses had cracked beneath them, empty sockets that stared without seeing, and then room zero opened again. This time for Lyle. Inside was fire. Not metaphor. Real licking flame. The walls blackened. The smell of smoke was thick, choking. And at the center himself, a boy crying, holding a toy airplane with one wing missing. Behind him stood the bleached man, no longer looming, just present. Lyle stepped forward. I remembered everything, he said. The bleached man tilted his head, as if unsure what to do. And I forgive myself. That word, forgive, echoed through the motel like a scream. The flames recoiled. The bleached man shuddered, and for the first time he looked small lost.
You're not God, Lyle said. You're just a wound with legs.
He stepped forward and embraced the bleached man, not with anger, not with fear, but with pity. And then the unexpected happened. The bleached man let go, not of Lyle, of himself. He shuddered, cracked, split, and inside him was a face, a man, young, tired, crying. He whispered,
I was the first guest. I held on too long. I became the place.
Lyle knelt beside him, then let go. And the bleached man crumbled into dust. At sunrise, the motel began to fade. One by one, the rooms folded inward. The hallway twisted into the sky. The pool shattered into light. Mara stood alone in the lobby, clutching the photo that had once been blank. Now it showed her and Jessa, smiling, holding hands. Lyle and Mara walked together into the desert. Behind them, the dusk-glass motel collapsed like a mirage. The sign flickered once, then blinked out, and in the distance, a child laughed. Chapter 7. Vacancy. They walked until the sun burned away the last of the cold. Lyle and Mara didn't speak much. There wasn't much left to say. And that, strangely, was a comfort. Their steps were lighter than they'd ever been, as if they'd both left something behind in the scorched motel soil, something they'd been dragging their entire lives. When they reached the road, it was just there, waiting like a faithful dog. A rental car sat at the edge of the highway, keys in the ignition. Windows rolled down. A breeze pushed gently through it, stirring the dust from the dashboard. Neither of them questioned it. They got in and drove. Miles passed in silence. A world returned. Phone signal returned. Gas stations, bird songs, colours. Mara rolled the window down and let the wind whip her hair like a child on her first drive. Her photo of Jessa was folded carefully in her pocket, no longer blank. She didn't look at it. She didn't need to. It was real now, and that was enough. Lyle stared at the road. His eyes were calm. I don't think it's gone, he said quietly. Mara turned to him.
The motel?
He nodded. No, I don't think so either. She leaned back, closed her eyes, not afraid, just aware. A week later, in a town 100 miles away, the dust-glass motel reappeared. Not built, not opened, just there. As if it had always been there. New paint, new sign. Same number of rooms. A young man drove up to it, lost, drifting. A note sat on the passenger seat beside him, a single name, scribbled in frantic ink. Gabriel, room 109. He didn't know why he had come, only that he had to. The motel clerk greeted him with a kind smile. She was tall, quiet, wore dark glasses. He asked her name. She paused, then said,
Mara.
Though she didn't know why. She handed him a key, room 109. Somewhere deep in the heart of the motel, a wall pulsed, a photo faded, and a skinless shadow curled up behind the mirror. Not gone, just resting, waiting for the next guest who refused to let go. Vacancy, it says. Always. The bleached man sleeps, but memory never does. So, my young tale-teller, what we bury does not vanish. Grief, guilt, regret, they do not rot quietly. They wait. They build walls. They become rooms we visit in dreams. Again and again, until we forget that we came to remember. Or worse, forget who we are trying not to become. The Dust Glass Motel teaches this. You cannot erase the past to escape it. You can only face it, bleed with it, and choose to walk away without letting it define your reflection. Some memories are scars, but scars are proof we survived. And the bleached man, he is what we become when we stop trying. Rest now, or knock again. The room is always ready. I hope you enjoyed the story, Room 109. Definitely a lot trippier and wackier than my usual stories. If you like this story at all and think this guy is sharing pretty funky stories and I want to show him some love, we'll hop on over to iTunes to leave this podcast a review. It goes so far when you do. And if you want to support the podcast and channel, hop on over to www.patreon.com/SFGT, and what you get is access to voting on stories, early access to those stories every single week, a whole week ahead, and you also get 320 kilobytes audio and allows you to hear me crystal clear. And of course, thank you all to our listeners who are listening, all 20,000 plus of you per week. I am eternally grateful. Now, legends, I want to take the time to thank my superstars, my friends that support me through Patreon. First up is the jaw-droppingly amazing Matto Star. Matto, you are not just a guest of a dust glass. You are its architect. You chose the desert where no map dares stretch. You whispered the words that make the doors open themselves. The bleached man steps aside for you, not out of fear, but respect. You are the name etched in the desk drawer that no guest has ever dared to open. The motel bends its rooms around your vision, hiding secrets behind the walls only you can hear. When the stories grow quiet, and even I forget which chapter comes next, you remind me. Your tea is steeped in midnight, brewed with silence and strange stars. Each sip is a memory that remembers back. If Mara found her sister, if Lyle found himself, it's because you lit the last hallway they walked down. You made sure the fire in Room Zero stayed burning, but never devoured. You, Matto Star, are not a character in the story. You are the pulse beneath the motel's floorboards. Dust glass stands because you will it to. Matto, you are a superstar and a great friend of mine. Thank you so much for your support. Have a wonderful week ahead of yourself, and here's to next week's horrific stories. Thank you, legend. And now to my white tea warlords. Lesosaurus Rex, you are the storm that never shows up on the forecast. A shapeshifter room in 106, laughing in a language that hasn't been invented yet. And you are also the barbell in the haunted gym. The clang of iron echoing through Room 108, a place where the bleached man does not enter for fear he'll be benched. You squat with ghosts on your shoulders, you deadlift regrets, you curl metaphysical dread. The elliptical in the motel, possessed. The punching bag bleeds memories. You once PR'd in a hallway that wasn't there the day before. Leg day is every day in your wing of dust glass, and when the mirror shows your form mid-rep, it whispers not, "You are enough." But you are the end. The bleached man tried to copy your workout once. He hasn't regenerated since. Leza, thank you so much for your support and being my pal. Have a kick-ass gym session and stay awesome, mate. And Maya, the motel's cats follow you, even the ones that don't exist. They gather in doorways, blinking in unison. They walk ahead of you, leading you to rooms that aren't on the blueprint. Some are mirrors, some are voids. One is made entirely of forgotten birthdays. And yet when you walk in, they purr. You carry ghost whiskers in your pocket. You speak in purrs and cryptic gestures. If a cat meows twice at your feet, you already know which guest will disappear next. Your tea smells faintly of fur, ink, and prophecy. The bleached man avoids Room 105 because that's where the cats bring their secrets. And Maya is the only one they'll let pet them. Legendary Maya, thank you so much for your support and kindness. Have a brilliant week ahead of yourself, and thank you so much for your support. Sangeetha Sigar, you do not knock. You know which door will open. Seer of ruin, herald of hush. The motel bends backward when you walk its halls. You sip your tea not for taste, but for timelines. The steam swirls into patterns only you can read, and you smile because none of us ever truly listened to your warnings. You were seen once in the motel library, eyes rolled white, murmuring stories that hadn't happened yet. The bleached man watches your visions from behind the glass, terrified that you might see him before he becomes him. You don't just know what's coming. You choose whether or not to tell us. Legendary Sangeetha, thank you so much for your support, and have an epic week, and thank you for being my pal. But I guess you already know that. And now to my Earl Grey enforcers and tiers below. I am lucky to have Chad Warren, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Paige Kramer, Peter Raffaelli, Rhonda Ray, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, and Michael Krupp. Thank you so much for your support. It goes a long, long way. Whether it's paying for domains, websites, new technology and new tools, you all help immensely to punch up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And so, the Dust Glass Motel sinks back into the sand. The key tags call and the mirror beneath a final sigh. But memory, memory, never leaves so quietly. If you find yourself driving a long, unfamiliar road, and the GPS glitches and the air gets just a little too still, listen carefully. You might hear a voice behind your own reflection. It might ask you what you've come to forget. It might offer you a room. Just one night. Just one memory. No cost, except everything you try to hold on to. But now, dear listener, you know the truth. And that makes all the difference. Until next time, keep your mirrors covered, your regrets folded tight. And if the vacancy signs flicker, don't stop. Not tonight. Thank you for listening.
Off the highway, mile marker gone. No stars above me. No name on the dawn. Key in my pocket. It wasn't mine. Ruin a night. Ticking out of time. TV's hissing truth I never told. Mirror holds a face that's growing old. Bleached man's whisper in my mouth. Takes the them inside out. Memories, a currency I spent trying to buy what I never meant. And the more I remember, the less I stay. Dust glass doesn't let you walk away. A sister's face fades in the frame. Shifts and says my name. Photographs without their skin. All my ghosts checked in again. I watch myself through CCTV. Every version less like me. Bleached man's whisper in my mouth. Takes the silence.
remember wrong, that's how I win. She's still waiting. You forgot the door.
Room so opens in my chest. I give it guilt, it gives me rest. But even empty, I still bleed. The cost of who I used to be.
Have a great week. We'll meet again. With love.